This is Radio Superior 1944, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1944. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now into the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes, station KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you to keep sharp. We have an axis to grind. It's 6 p.m. Standard Wartime, Wednesday, June 20th, 1944. Lou Martin is standing by with the 6 o'clock news. Morgan Murphy has tonight's editorial, and this is something Lou might not even know yet. Harriet has been promoted to a full-time welder at Globe Shipyards.
Oh. Full-time? Is she leaving the radio station?
Well, she's stopping by, Lou, maybe to give you her notice. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Popkin's Summer Clearance Days. Get a handsome spring-filled bed Davenport for the cabin at just $79. Good evening, Lou.
You could have waited to tell me until after the newscast. Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. We have word from the War Department that some Japanese cities have been bombed. This is the first bombing of Japan since Colonel Doolittle's raid in 1942. Censors are only saying that many B-29 superfortresses took off from India, refueled in China, and dropped their payloads on Japan. The attack took place on June the 15th, 1944, 5 days ago. A photograph of one of the crews includes a Duluth man. Lieutenant Harold Johnson of Duluth co-piloted the new long-range B-29 bomber in this historic mission. For other news from the Pacific and Europe, we begin our World News shortwave report from fighting in the Marianas Islands.
This is the Central Pacific. Your correspondent, Daryl Berrigan, with the Allied Command off the shore of Saipan. The Nimitz MacArthur team is steadily breaching the massive 4,000-mile Japanese defense line in the Pacific. This line stretches from New Guinea in the southern Pacific to the Kurilis Islands north of Japan. In the center lies the Marianas Islands with its prize, Saipan. It is there that soldiers and Marines are battling two Jap divisions where the prized Aceto airfield is now within the reach of the Leatherneck. Saipan is vital because it would put Allied air forces within bombing range of Japan without having to refuel. U.S. troops enlarge their beachhead after repulsing two Jap counterattacks. Earlier, the Yanks beat back an amphibious landing which tried to reinforce enemy forces. 13 barges laden with Nippon soldiers were attacked from the air and sunk. Attempts by Jap Zeros to protect their troops were met with slaughter from battleships and cruisers in what some here are calling the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot. In other Pacific war news, Admiral Chester Nimitz also announced that the Kurilis Islands were bombed in runs from the Aleutian Islands off Alaska. And this news from General MacArthur's headquarters far south of here. The last Japanese offensive base in New Guinea has been neutralized. U.S. airmen blitzed Sarong on New Guinea's northwest tip. 50 enemy planes, 5 merchant ships trying to resupply Sarong. Several smaller vessels were all wiped out in the action. Finally, MacArthur's flyers struck the Fortress Island base at Truk, dropping 157 tons of bombs. Off the shores of Saipan, this is Daryl Berrigan reporting, calling France.
This is the Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force in France, Max Gordon reporting. Lieutenant General Omar Bradley's American troops squeezed within 8 miles of the vital strategic port of Cherbourg today. Capture of Cherbourg is said to be imminent. Toward the eastern flank of the 116-mile Normandy front, British Tommies battled the shell-torn town of Tilly-sur-Soulay between Bayeux and Caen. The Germans continued to stubbornly hold the southern part of that city. Steadily strengthening their hold on the peninsula since the D-Day invasion June 6th, the Yanks turned back a desperate attempt by the Germans to break out of this trap. Germans struck in the dead of night but were thrown back with heavy losses. Now, the Germans seem to have only two choices, surrender or die. The spearhead of this spectacular drive by Bradley's 9th Division will capture this Napoleonic port city. The American-held zone has grown to twice its width on the peninsula in just 2 days. Dispatches from General Bernard Montgomery's 21st Army Group headquarters say 50,000 Germans are caught in the Cherbourg net. Capture of a French naval base would be old hat for the 9th Division. It was they who broke through to take Bizerte, Tunisia, just 13 months ago. In France, this is Max Jordan calling Stan Turner.
This is Allied headquarters on the Normandy coast. Stan Turner reporting. It has fallen upon me to broadcast the story of the war correspondents covering the D-Day invasion. Much of my story comes from the Scripps Howard newspaper columnist Ernie Pyle. Before the invasion, Pyle wrote that correspondents accepted the fact that not everyone would come through alive, but most have come through unscathed. So far, it's believed only Exchange Telegraph naval correspondent Arthur Thorpe was killed. That was in a sea action on June the 11th. A few other reporters have not been heard from, and two were wounded. But otherwise, the difficulties were only the struggle that comes with such a bloody invasion. Pyle writes that reporters, armed only with typewriters landing with the D-Day troops, red-eyed from lack of sleep, find themselves wondering why they are still alive. For the rest of this report, I will be quoting Ernie Pyle. Writers who had gone 2 days without sleep dropped exhausted on the ground, sleeping in wet clothes with no blankets. Two of them in particular had been through all the frightful nightmares that the assault troops had experienced because they had come ashore with them. Associated Press correspondent Don Whitehead hit the beach with one regiment just an hour after H hour. Chicago Tribune scribe Jack Thompson was landing at the same time with a different regiment. They were on the beaches for more than 4 hours with the hideous cloudbursts of shells and bullets. Jack Thompson said, "You've never seen a beach like it before. Dead and wounded men were lying so thick you could hardly take a step. One officer was killed only 2 feet away from me." Pyle continued, "Whitehead was still asleep when I went to his foxhole. I said, 'Get up, you lazy so-and-so.' He started grinning without opening his eyes, but he knew who it was. He said, 'I don't know why I'm alive. It was awful. It was so awful that for a while you didn't care whether you got hit or not.'" Whitehead has probably been in more amphibious landings than any other correspondent over here. "I know of 6 he made, 4 of them murderously tough, and he said, 'I think I've gone on one too many of these things, not because of what might happen to me personally, but I think I've lost my perspective. It's like dreaming the same nightmare over and over again. When you try to write, you feel that you have written it all before.'" Said Pyle, "I know only too well what he means." On the Normandy coast, this is Stan Turner.
The Germans have added a new weapon to its war effort, robot bombs. For 5 straight days and nights, these unmanned rockets have been crashing into southern England, wrecking buildings and piling up civilian deaths. These buzz bombs, as they're called, are harassing England at a rate not seen since the Blitz of 1940 and 1941. The Air Ministry has confirmed that these jet-propelled missiles are being launched from northern France. The Republicans are setting up their convention in Chicago. Although New York Governor Thomas Dewey is a heavy favorite, Ohio Governor John Bricker is making a strong fight for the Republican presidential spot. Officially, Mr. Dewey has said that he won't talk about running for president, but a draft Dewey movement was announced this week. Meanwhile, President Roosevelt is expected to sign the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944 in 2 days. The bill, pushed by the American Legion, guarantees help for returning soldiers to pay for college education, job training, and cheap home loans. The Servicemen's Readjustment Act is also called the Montgomery GI Bill of Rights. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:07. Jack McKenna has these words from our sponsor.
Thank you, Lewis, and indeed I do. From Popkins on clearance days, Popkins Furniture, not just a name, it's a way to live. How about a handsome new Springfield bed Davenport for just $79.95? Comfortable and, just great to have around the cabin for extra people coming in. Great for the cabin, that's it. Handsome new Springfield bed Davenport, $79.95. see them. And here's a massive white oak breakfast set for just $34.50. How about that? It's got leaves and everything and sturdy chairs. You'll like that. Attractively styled cribs, in case you have a little child on hand there, for $14.95. They're safe and they're sure. Convenient credit terms. What more could you ask for? That's Popkins during clearance days in Superior.
Another serviceman from Superior has been killed in action. The parents of Corporal Arnold Aker have been notified that their son was killed in Italy on May the 28th. Corporal Aker had served overseas since the invasion of North Africa, enlisting in 1942. The 38-year-old son of Mr. and Mrs. Ole Aker was in the tank corps at the Anzio beachhead. He was awarded a Silver Star Medal for gallantry February the 18th. He was also awarded a Purple Heart. 60 poliomyelitis cases have been reported so far this year in Wisconsin, although that compares with only 15 cases at the same time in 1943. State Health Officer Carl Newport says that there is no cause for alarm. Dr. Newport says the number is down from the 10-year average of 170 cases of infantile paralysis. He says the next 3 weeks will tell if the dread disease is spreading. The State Conservation Commission wants to close almost all of the Brule River Valley to hunting. The Douglas County Fish and Game League is vowing to fight the move. Assemblyman Arthur Lenroot and Lyman Powell are leading the committee to oppose the action. Mr. Lenroot is asking Governor Walter Goodland to step in. The deer population is high. The Walter Butler Shipyard in Superior has been awarded a Gold Star. It's one of just 10 shipyards in the nation building cargo vessels to get the Gold Star. Froing Brothers Shipyard in Milwaukee and Smith Shipbuilding Company in Sturgeon Bay also won the awards, Jack.
So, Harriet's Globe Shipyard didn't win a Gold Star. Well, what the heck. We'll have to give her a ribbing for that. Thanks, Lou. And Harriet will be in, folks. That should be interesting.
For once, I'm not looking forward to that.
Really interesting. Let's check the forecast for this June 20th, 1944. Nice summertime weather with partly twinkly skies tonight and mostly blue skies tomorrow. Tonight's low about 50 degrees with a high tomorrow around 74.
Is twinkly a meteorologist term?
Oh, yeah. You've got your cirrus, your stratus, your cumulus, and twinkly skies. Let's kick things off now, though, with Vaughn Monroe and his theme on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Racing with the moon, high up in the midnight blue, and then all too soon, it's lost from view. The stars. love we knew. And then like the moon,
great big 1941 hit, Racing with the Moon, on station KUWS. And here's a real important way you can help the war effort, folks. If you have a spare room, the Walter Butler Shipbuilding Company wants to hear from you. The housing shortage is critical. If you have available rooms, register with the housing department of Butler Shipbuilding in Superior and its Riverside Yard in Duluth. And here's another classic number from a class act. This is Duke Ellington and his 1941 hit, Take the A-Train, on the Martin and McKenna Show. Ellington and his famous Take the A-Train on station KUWS. Uh-oh.
Aren't you glad to see me?
Let me introduce Douglas County Draft Board Chairman Joe Reffeley. Nice to see you.
Since when?
Be nice. Be nice. He's a guest.
I don't remember inviting him.
I don't need any invite, McCorkle. What I've got to say is important. As a lifelong Republican, it pains me to say this, but I have to hand it to President Roosevelt. This GI Bill is a cat's meow. If President Wilson had this place and after WW1, the country would have been better off.
It took 6 months to get the bill through Congress, even though they passed it by a big margin.
It isn't a good time to vote against a vet, McMartin. The American Legion led the push. The boys at the Roy Kelly Post in Ashland and the Blomberg Post in Superior helped.
That's Blomberg. Hey, you said it right.
The old colonel never forgets a name, McMichael. This GI Bill of Rights will help our returning doughboys readjust to civilian life. It'll avoid the post-war recession we had in 1919 and 20 because it offers job training and even a college education to guys who want it. And I'll tell you what, if this had been around 19, we wouldn't have had this March on Washington in 32. No bonus army and a heck of a lot fewer Hoovervilles. So I'm telling veterans out there and families of vets, now's the time to start planning. We got the Hun on the run and the Jap on his back. They'll be coming home soon. This is the best present Uncle Sam could give for their homecoming.
So, you'll be voting for President Roosevelt this November?
Just plain crazy talk. I only back winners, and Dewey's a winner in my book.
I'd like to just chime in and say how right the colonel is.
Why, thank you, Miss Fuhog.
Fuhog?
Let me introduce our community editor, Harriet Furring.
This GI Bill will help our soldiers train for jobs and go to school. That means the job market won't be flooded when the war is over. Those of us in the war industry will be able to keep our jobs, too.
Then you'll go back to being a secretary or a housewife.
Uh-oh. No.
Some women prefer that, but for this lady, I'm here to stay.
The woman's place is in the kitchen.
Uh-oh. No. Morgan Murphy is in next with his editorial. See you, Colonel. Here's Tommy Dorsey and his Clam Bake 7, and the music goes round and round and round and round and round the McMartin and McCorkle show.
Well, I'll show you now. Oh, you blow through here, the music goes down and around. Whoa, ho, 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 when it comes out here. Now push the first bar down, the music goes down and around. Whoa, ho, 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 when it comes out here. Now push the middle valve down, hear that music go down and around. Below, 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 ho, ho, listen to the jazz come out. Push that other valve down, hear the music go down and around. Whoa, ho, 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 when it comes out here. Hey, Tommy, what's he got there?
Well, that's a clarinet, Edith.
What's he doing with it?
He's trying to show you how the music goes around and around.
Oh, he can't show me how the music goes around and around on a straight instrument.
Ouch. Kick it, Sid, kick it.
Boy, he can kick it for my money.
And now we're going to put on a customer's chorus, and we want you all to join in lightly on this last refrain.
Oh, I blow through here, the music goes round and around. Whoa, ho, 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 and it comes up here. Now you push the first valve down, the music goes down and around. Whoa, ho, 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 and it comes up here. Push that middle valve down, hear the music go down and around. Below, 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 whoa, ho, ho. Listen to the jazz come out. Push that other valve down, all the music goes round and around. Whoa, ho, 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 and it comes up here.
1937. Some nice pre-war swing music tonight, folks. Tommy Dorsey and his Clam Bake 7. And the music goes round and round and round and round and round, round, round on station KUWS.
Let me introduce Superior Evening Telegram publisher Morgan Murphy with today's editorial.
I think the topic between Harriet and Colonel Ruffley is more interesting.
And dangerous.
I call it a 10-foot pole topic.
I'm here to talk about the American government's inability to speak plain English. We call it bureaucraties. In fact, when it comes to the new Social Security system, it's just plain gobbledygook.
Hey, you criticizing the U.S. government, the good old U.S. of A?
Criticizing the government is the good old American way. Anyway, it's harder to read a Social Security report than a science journal. We shouldn't be paying government employees to write things like please be advised or pursuant to your request or held in abeyance.
I don't know what you're talking about. I do know that when the men get back from overseas, they're going to want their women just where they were before they left, baking bread and keeping house.
Colonel, the days of women being barefoot and pregnant are over. When men at the shipyards whistle at women, the women whistle back.
Shocking. That's just shocking. Ever since they started rationing rubber girdles, women have been acting funny.
Now, Colonel, I know your heart's in the right place.
Well, there's been some doubt about that over the years.
Jack. But please understand, things have changed. Sure, when we first started doing men's work, we were called lipsticks and dollies. But now we're one of the boys. We've joined the union, increased production rates, and marched in labor demonstrations. We've worked side by side with Indians and Negroes, and I must say, it's all been very thrilling.
These men fought for their country. They deserve a better homecoming than having their women folk working 10 hours a day and maybe even working a job that they should have.
Well, the government has assured all returning servicemen will have the first shot at their old jobs.
And as far as I'm concerned, if a man can't support my wife, then he shouldn't get married.
You mean support a wife?
Of course, a wife. It's against the law to marry more than one woman.
It's also against the laws of sanity.
This conversation is spiraling downward.
Music to the rescue, folks. This one's for Harriet and all of you women working in essential war industries. This is Alan Miller and his orchestra and Rosie the Riveter on the Martin and McKenna Show.
All the day long, whether rain or shine, she's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory, Rosie. The Riveter keeps a sharp lookout for 7 times. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little frail can do more than a male can do, Rosie. The Riveter.
Rose got a boyfriend, Charlie.
Charlie, he's a Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie.
Working overtime
on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production need, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie. The Riveter.
Overtime
on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production need, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie.
The Riveter.
Alan Miller and his orchestra and Rosie the Riveter on station KUWS.
Lewis, you haven't said much during our discussion on working women. What do you think?
Uh-oh.
I think you're working too much. That's what I think.
Now, Lewis, this. I'm a bit surprised. I thought you were for things like equal pay between men and women, nursery schools and daycare, family restaurants, so women who work don't have to cook all the time.
What kind of radical are you, McMartin?
It's got nothing to do with those things. Those things are fair, and I hope it happens. It's got nothing to do with women, but it's got everything to do with one woman.
He lost me there.
Wait. Lewis always has a way of extracting himself from situations that would send the average guy down in flames.
What do you mean, one woman, Lewis?
I mean you.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Sweet?
I told you.
Amazing.
You're worried we won't have as much time together. But I'm still going to be here at the radio station. Maybe not as often, but we'll get through it. And every Sunday we'll have a picnic or take in a movie. You'll see.
Well, if you say so.
Oh, it'll be all right, Lewis.
This is getting nauseating. I'm leaving.
Well, that means another happy ending, folks. Stay tuned now for Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy, and Mr. District Attorney, folks. We'll be back, same time, same place on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, of course, and the draft board chairman stays away. For Lou and Harriet, then, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1944, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Paul Guggenheimer plays foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Don Mason, all events reported on Radio Superior 1944 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.